Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another Friday afternoon. You are tuned to the Sideshow at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com. Where I am at this moment in time is slap bang in the centre-ish of London. I say centre-ish. Well, Finsbury Square. To the left of me, you just heard his voice there briefly, is a gentleman by the name of Jonathan Ward. Jonathan and myself first came across each other. Well, I suppose I came across him because of his work, and he probably vice versa because of mine. But we've met since, I guess, at Hampton Chelsea at the Garden Media Guild Awards, and we would have also met again at the party for Perennial. Jonathan, how are you? You're very welcome to the Sideshow.
Very glad to be here, Peter.
Curiosity killed the cat. Because I know this, and it's a bit, you know, I won't say, well, two things. I think the Sideshow has always been about the individual, number one. But number two, there's always a common denominator across the board, pretty much, which is genuine nice guy, works hard, plays a little bit at the same time, which is entirely allowed once all the work is done and the bills are paid. But I know all of the answers to all the questions I'm going to ask you, although everybody else possibly wouldn't. What is the business? What is Jonathan Ward?
Jonathan Ward trades as Ginger Horticulture. Simply down to hair colour as much as anything, which is even more amusing as I'm bald. And the business is predominantly as a horticultural photographer.
Now that sounds a little bit silly, but when I talk to Lee from the Skinny Jean Gardeners and I say, where did you come up with the name? He will tell you, and you can go back and listen to that episode and you'll hear it. And he said, people think there's some other reason behind the scenes. There's kind of not. It's literally just that. It's quite a smart branding, if you'll allow me say that, because there literally is only one Ginger Hort name out there.
Yes, there is indeed. There are other Ginger Horticulturalists, but there's only one Ginger Hort.
Good morning, Darren Jacques. Good evening, Darren Jacques. And in case you're listening later on today again, good evening and good night, Darren Jacques. I hope you're doing very good, my good man. Let's backtrack and let's get to the serious stuff. You weren't always a photographer, or were you?
No, I've always had an interest in photography growing up, but it got pushed to one side as having a career took over. And I was worked within horticulture, so a move slightly to one side was no great difficulty. I think, like yourself, there's always been a love of plants and the garden and working in gardens.
So when you were, how do I say it, to take the Philip Turville example, and I'm saying these names, Philip works based in Kew, he's an amazing gentleman and an extremely accomplished horticulturist, but you know, Philip's love of plants, there is no questioning that when you hear that interview. Were you at it at that age? Was your father into this, or where did it literally all start for you?
I think there was always a love of being outside in the outside world, and it was predominantly a natural world enjoyment from a very, very young age, and that was always encouraged. And it wasn't until I was looking for a career on that point, you're starting to leave school, that I thought this is the way I wanted to go. So there was no love from a very young age. It was mid-teens onwards.
What was your first thing that you did? Did you cut the grass? Did you find out a pain in the backside? Did you pruning? Was it because, again, there's two things that I find with people who get into horticulture very young. One is your dad made you cut the bushes, inverted commas, out the back garden, or made you cut the grass, or it was, no, I actually developed a love for that particular species of plants. And yes, it sounds a bit odd. Usually it's cacti, or in Philip's case, to reference him again, it's oak.
It was definitely the first job I can remember doing that was very much horticulture based. It was my first or second day working at age 16. I was pruning about 2,500 bush roses for bare root sales. It didn't put me off, but I've always had a mistrust of roses ever since.
I gather that's with secateurs by hand, above the node at a 45 degree angle, etc., etc.
That's the way. Every single one by hand.
And getting that wrong, if you know people who grow roses, then you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. If you've been to the Chelseas or the Hamptons, you'll understand it just that little bit better again. I would turned down an entire batch of roses based on seeing the first few 5-10 plants come off the truck and seeing any form of dieback on them. It is that pedantic for a very good reason.
Oh, definitely. It taught me a lot about sheer persistence in getting a job done in the garden and getting it right. I've no idea how those roses are doing now, but we are talking 30 plus years ago now.
Okay, so that gives me a rough idea. Are you mathematician whiz kids out there, literally, of what age Jonathan is? Where did you go from there, Jonathan, and how did the career progress?
The career, that job was in a local garden centre in the northwest of England, and the career moved on. It's taken me around the country and overseas, from tending gardens in New Zealand right up to being a plant buyer for some of the largest plant retailers in the country.
How does that happen? I mean, did you go and do the college thing? Where you had you got like a bit of a management head? Because let's be frank about it: when you're in a nursery and there's 70 guys working there, or when you're in a landscaping company and there's 120 guys working there, and I'm referencing myself and saying that, not that you want to be the star player in the football academy so that the scouts notice you, but you do either have that little bit of something about you, or you kind of don't, in order to move up that ladder or to stand out for all of the very, very, very right reasons.
I did a 1-year course at college that was at the Myerscough College, which is now part of the University of Central Lancashire, and 2 years of day release, but that was it, which was barely enough to teach you the basics. I was never quite as fond of the classroom work as I was as working outside. So to quote somebody else, I learned more from a 3-minute record than I ever learned in school.
Okay, I'll take your point on that, but I'll also reference, and again, not to keep harping on about them, but I think when you got cues, your kind of stamp of approval on one hand, equally you will turn around and say, well, I was the buyer for, you know, some of the biggest chains in the country. It's not that one is better than the other. They're non-comparables in every single way. But you kind of got there as sure as, let's say, if I'm allowed to put myself up on that little bit of a perch, but as I did, or as maybe Philip Turville did. Is that a fair way to put your horticultural career at that point?
It all comes down to actually working hard. No matter how much qualifications you've got on paper, it's an industry that you work hard, you get results. Whether that's a personal result in a career growth, or whether it's just the results in the garden.
Okay, now let's backtrack slightly, because when we met up around the time of the Garden Media Guild Awards, which was November 2016, I do remember walking up to get a bite to eat with you and another two friends of ours. Along that way, you were kind of turned around and saying, oh, I did that landscaping over there back when. We were on the tube when I was coming in from London City Airport around the time of the perennial party, and you were saying to me, oh, that thing over there, I landscaped that, did all the planting on that as well. You didn't just do the, you know, if you don't mind me saying, not that there's nothing wrong with it, but you didn't just do the back garden kind of stuff. You had a plateau, you had your own little bit of a level.
As only since about 5 years ago I've worked for myself, everything else has been with other companies, but I've always seemed to have been drawn to some of the bigger jobs that perhaps not everyone wants to get involved in. So if you wanted to plant a big, big, fully grown tree, it naturally seemed to gravitate to myself. I'd gained this skill set of being able to deal with big trees and big specimen trees, as well as understanding the retail market in different roles.
Now, I'll give you that. And for those of you listening at home, let me put this in context. When you're planting a tree that is the height of a, what am I looking at, directly opposite Finsbury Square, we've got level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's about 8 stories high of a tree. When you're dropping in one of them and the price tag on it, go talk to somebody like Mark Straver, or listen to that interview, in fact, Mark Straver from Hortus Loci, and you'll understand that 35,000 pounds or euros is actually not that much to pay for a tree, pause, when you see and realise what you're getting for it, number one, number two, that you're not paying for that time for it to grow, and number three, when you turn around and after that landscape is complete with that feature in place, it's actually not bad value. However, when the tree decides not to grow, which it has a it's an opportunity to do that. Even though you've done everything horticulturally correct, your name is kind of a little bit on the block. Is that a fair way to put that? Have you had those moments? Am I far off the mark?
I think everyone's had those moments. If you've not had those moments, you're probably not doing it right. But you move a big tree, it's going to sit there for a year, maybe two, maybe even 3 years before it starts to grow as perhaps the customer expects it. Just as you plant a small plant from a garden centre that's perhaps cost you 10 or 12 euros, may just sit there for a few days. It scales up.
And that's exactly all it is. It's same theory, same principles. It's just extra zeros at the end of it.
That's all it is, just down to the size.
Now we're getting into the good bits, because we've got an idea of who and what you were, I guess, as an individual and as a business, and the skill set and the intelligence, the intellect that you have had and do obviously still have as a person who's made and built and created spaces. What was that business? What happened there?
They're businesses that for one reason or another either no longer trading or I've moved on from.
Why?
So everything has its time, and I think I was always subconsciously working towards being my own boss and being self-employed, and perhaps it took a few tries of working for people to realise that.
Is there a point in that which is, look, Peter, there are the greatest brains who create spaces outdoors, but they're not very good with a calculator? No disrespect, lads. This is just general chit-chat here. Or, and against that, I also know people who turn around and say, look, he's not the greatest at building spaces, but he's remained in business through the boom, bust, boom and bust. Is there a case for that in maybe what you have done in the past?
I think definitely. I can remember riding the boom, in certainly in the UK, in the 90s with the likes of Ground Force, and everyone was having a great time and making money. And it went after that. And by being the person who will perhaps take that risk and go for the bigger job, I've put my head above the parapet and perhaps pay the cost at times because of that.
It's a double-edged sword, though, that is very much. And when the stakes are high, as in, and let's be quite blunt about this, when you go work for somebody and you're building a garden that is €250,000 heading upwards, or not even €250,000, 50,000, 10,000, 500 euro, the zeros are not really that relevant depending on where you are in the market. But essentially, if Mary or Jimmy, the individual with the very small front garden, or if Mary and Jimmy Limited with the 500,000 million pound budget decide not to pay you, you, or in my case, I, can be told, I'll see you on the steps of the court in 2 years' time, in which case, in that moment in time, you're kind of gone bust, and you'll meet their solicitor on the steps of the court, and they'll hand you a cheque for probably half, and your solicitor will advise you to take that. You're gone at that stage of the game. Is that a fair way to put that part of the ugly side, or the downside of being in business for yourself and making beautiful spaces?
It's always the downside of being in business, and I don't think it's tied to just the gardening industry. Anyone who's supplying a product runs that risk, and that's the risk of being in business. But you are guaranteed to get more back by just taking that risk. And it doesn't happen that often, but it can take a business down, and has taken businesses down.
And again, what we're talking about here is nothing new. If you've been in business and you're listening to this, you'll understand. You'll know somebody very close to you that this has happened to. I guess, has it come up in previous sideshows? Yeah, but you might have to listen a little bit closely. Has it come up where I would know Jonathan as well, and he has, I guess, chosen to be as open as he is? Well, credit where it's due, but again, it's nothing that hasn't been discussed before. Are there things, or are there points, Jonathan, where you look back and kind of go, I wish I had it done a little bit differently, in brackets? I know we all do.
I think, yeah, definitely we all do. There's no one point where I said, I would have done that differently. Given my time again, I'd have probably gone self-employed probably 20 years ago, but perhaps wouldn't have had the skills to develop what I've got now. It would have been a very different business.
Here's where we change onto the happier note. The morph, or the point at which you turned around and went from, let's say, hands on tools or dirtier boots, let's call it that, standing in the middle of an open space that is yet to be created. And again, I'll reference, you know, the work that Grow Wild based at Kew and Philip Turville do. That ability to see a giant throwing rocks into the sea, to close your eyes, to see a childlike fable and go, I'm going to build a garden with that in the back of my head, and the little people running around saying, let's do this, it'll be gorgeous when it evolves and the space is complete, it'll look brilliant. They'll think you're a bit potty, but they'll also think you're a miracle worker. Have you kind of left that a little bit to one side and went, I know it'll make a great photograph? What was that switching point where you turned off the light in the living room and turned on the light in the hallway?
I think there was a point I'd been made redundant. I was looking at the idea of going self-employed, and there's a point when you look around an industry and say, where are the gaps? There's no point in going to be another landscaper. There are better landscapers out there than I will ever be. But I saw this gap. There was a need in the marketplace for a photographer who focused on the gardens. Lots of great amateur photographers take nice garden shots, but it's turning that into a business and an industry. So an amateur photographer will take a lot more pictures than I will. And lots of photographers make the leap and think, I'm going to take photographs every day. You're running a photography business, not just being a photographer, and they're two very different things.
But that's the equivalent of people saying to me, oh, it must be great to work in the great outdoors all the time. And you're kind of going, hold on a second, darling. And the nicest way of saying it was -3 Celsius yesterday. We had, you know, 80 millimetres of rainfall over a four-day period. It's not always. We're back to that. There's an element of remaining in business and what is the hobby and the crossover. I've always said, I'll say to our very good friend Fiona Kelly, stay in your allotment. The more you love it as that and the more you wish you should leave your job. Let's go to Jonathan and Ginger Hort at the top of the game, and we'll start there and kind of go backwards down the way. We bumped into each other at Chelsea Flower Show, a very prestigious show, and one where am I saying this correctly, you would be commissioned to do how many gardens would you take on?
I would take on probably no more now than about 4 commissions, and that may be for 1 or 2 shots of every garden, or just to focus on one specific garden, or some of the events that happen on that wonderful press day and the people that interact with the garden when they visit the show during the week that it's open.
Okay, let's go to another one, the Hampton Court Palace Flower Show. How do you fare on that one?
I think Hampton Court's a repeat of Chelsea just a month later.
Okay, now let's go a little bit global for those listening across the waters, in the States or back home in Ireland. Internationally, what garden events have you worked in and towards?
I've covered the Malmo Garden Show in Sweden and the Gardening World Cup in Japan.
Now let's get into this one, because this is slightly unusual, possibly to some listening. How does that work for you? Do you go across as a, I won't say a hobby gardener, but do you fly yourself to Japan? Do you pay your hotel costs? Do you do the same thing in Malmo in Sweden? I understand you're living in the UK, so it's not that far of a trek for you to go, let's say, to Chelsea kind of thing. But how does Japan Malmo work?
They work in very similar ways, that you work with the show organisers to help them generate content and coverage for that show by placing the photographs in the right places, whether that's with a news agency or direct with a magazine or a newspaper outside their country.
But financially, for you as a business, how does that work? I'm getting a bit pernickety now on this one.
It's a combination of, they may cover my expenses, they may pay me some more than just the expenses, or if it's a European show, I may pay my own expenses and sell the pictures afterwards.
Well, I'll speak on Jonathan's behalf then, if you'll allow me to do this. It doesn't cost him a red cent. To be quite fair, flights, accommodation, pretty much everything all looked after. Again, it's a business, but there's it takes a while, Jonathan, and again, I'm in, not to discuss your business affairs, but more to pay you the compliment. It takes a while to be invited there, number one, and number two, so that it's not at your own expense. Is that a better way to put that?
Yes, that's correct. At the end of the day, you've got to consistently deliver a top quality standard of work, no matter what you're presented with at that moment. So you go to Japan and you may have stunning blue skies and it's no problem at all. Consequently, I may have 3 hours before the next typhoon hits.
Okay, things are changing ever so slightly. For a decent example of your fine work, what would be the top 3-4 things that you have photographed and why?
I think definitely some of the gardens in Japan. Not necessarily by Japanese designers, but by some of the Southeast designers were worlds apart from what we're seeing at Chelsea and in the European shows. A different cultural sensitivity takes over the gardens, and they're, let's find the right words, there's a different look and a different feel to the gardens that we don't see in the West. As much as I like the gardens, I'm as much fascinated by the people and some of the portraits of the people working in the gardens. I've been really pleased with. Maybe not, they won't necessarily hang on the walls of the National Portrait Gallery just yet, but there's the look of the passion and the enjoyment of someone working in the garden is phenomenally difficult to catch, and I have been lucky enough to catch that on a few occasions.
That obviously makes a difference to you, and I've always said it, happier people always get the happier gardens, and there are people in my business who I get on with very, 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 very well as Donegan Landscaping, and essentially the reality of it is there is a check, there is money, make me smile. If I'm not happy with the landscape, we'll take the whole thing up and we'll start all over again. But there is also a separation between, because it might be, let's say, a little bit more, if you allow me use the word, corporate, as versus when I go to, let's say, a family or an individual and they've worked hard all their life and they've, you know, as invariably we all do, but they want to create a home as versus, let's say, a nice house with a nice garden. Do you get to the point where you kind of start to care about the work? I'm not saying the money doesn't matter. Of course, it plays a role in it, but does that change the dynamic of the photographs?
I very rarely photograph a garden without speaking to the designer or the owners of the garden, because that always helps you interpret the landscape and what they see their garden as. And sometimes it's showing them more of what they want and what they see in the garden, and sometimes it's showing them something different. We're showing them the dream, and hopefully I'm showing them their garden at the best. And it's not just about going and taking a nice picture, it's going and saying that's a really nice garden, that's a great picture, but to get the best out of it, I need to move the trampoline, I need to take the slide out of it, I need to make sure there's no wheelbarrows in the shot, because that's not a view of anyone's garden. That's the maintenance side of the garden. And it's making sure that's not there when you take the picture.
But you're a guy who's been in business. You've built the spaces. You've had the knocks and the falls, and you've had the ups and the very highs, as I would often refer to about myself. And you've also equally had the very, very lows. You've had the emotional times, the, you know, sitting down, crying on your own at the edge of your own garden that you've built, knowing that you're not going to get paid for it, is something that either people have been there and done and experienced, or you plain and, you know, quite simply haven't. When you look at somebody building a show garden, knowing what goes in behind the scenes, and let's be honest about it, press day is one thing, but having built show gardens, you know, sometimes it can be quite a lonely space or a lonely place to be, and it can be quite a difficult journey. You've been there, you've done that, you know that emotion, and now you're photographing it. Does that question make sense to you at all?
It makes perfect sense, because I feel that my strength as a photographer is I photograph what I know. I wouldn't be any good in going to photograph a baby shower or a great big wedding. It's not a world that I've lived in for any great length of time, because I understand and know what's going to happen next and know where someone's going to be. You're always thinking one or two steps ahead and ready to get that shot. Where another photographer who says, I can go and photograph that, will not understand the nuances of what's happening and where things are going to move to. It's not necessarily moving very fast, it's just moving at a slow pace or a steady pace. And as a photographer, you're an observer, you're not always taking part in building that garden. So, you know, you've got to know when to step back and get out of the way quite often so you don't get run over.
But is there also an element to that in, how do I say it, you know, when Peter Donegan goes to Chelsea or to Hampton, or equally when the guy from Chelsea or Hampton comes to Dublin, I would not so much critique their gardens in a bad way, pause, or that they would critique mine in a very bad way. It's just that they're always entitled to say, well, or, and equally I, that I might have done it that way instead of that way. They will turn around and go, well, here's the reason why, because poetic license or artistic license, in which case, is that the point at which you're saying, okay, I mightn't agree with how the garden is built and done, even though it got gold or not gold, but I'm now the photographer and I'm not the garden maker designer. Is that the point where you have to also have a little bit of a separation when it's required?
You definitely need that separation. It's not my garden. It's not my job to go there and critique. It's my job to go there and make their work look as best as possible. The people building show gardens are doing that at the best of their game, and you've got to respect that and show that. There's no... I don't approach it, say, I'm looking for the things that have gone wrong. No interest in photographing that. I just want people to look their best and show them off and show their skills off to the best.
Okay, now I'm extremely conscious as we come to the tail end of the show that I'm painting Jonathan in a kind of a, how do I say it? He can be a bit over emotional, and I don't mean to do that in any way, so I show people. I genuinely don't. Jonathan is, number one, an absolute gentleman. Number two, he is extremely talented at what he does for a living. Otherwise, says you, he wouldn't be in business for the last number of years. Definitely wouldn't, no. And respected him what he does. He is also, however, good friends with the Skinny Jean gardener. Well, one of. I'm told Jonathan's preference would be Dale. As you and I are both well aware, I won't say my preference would be Lee, but, you know, Lee would talk to me more than Dale would. Is that a fair way to put that kind of a thing, Jonathan?
I think to quote our Americans, I'll have to take the fifth and couldn't possibly comment on who's my favourite Skinny Jeans gardener.
Well, according to Lee, it's not him, if you don't mind me saying.
He's just stirring it up, I'm sure.
Have you ever taken this photograph?
I've taken photographs of them both.
Yeah, how did that go for you?
That was great fun. Always a pleasure to work with them.
They were at the World Cup in Japan. Is that where you ended up taking the photographs last?
I did. I photographed their garden. I think we need to have words with them about gardens and designing them, because no one's got a round garden in this world. And they did design a round garden that took their influence and showed them well, but not a garden that fits in most people's back square spaces.
No, but there's also a case for show gardening about that as well. And also Lee and Dale. Well, what did my own mom say about me, Lee, if you're listening to this? She referenced me as being extremely unique, and I shall take that as a compliment.
I think we could describe them as unique and perhaps a little bit special.
That would also be me. So he's not just talking about, don't worry about it, lads. You're not on your own. In the meantime, Jonathan, it's been a pleasure, mate, and good to talk to you as always.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you, Peter.
Anything you need at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow and sodshow.com. If you put in Jonathan, J-O-N, Jonathan Ward, or Ginger Hort is probably the easiest thing to do. Just stick it into Google, Ginger Hort and Sodshow. It'll come up for you. All his details will be there. Anything else you might need at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow and sodshow.com. From London, from myself and from Jonathan, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, John.